This is Your Family Matters with Carla Dedesi here at WFYL, working for your liberty, 1180 AM. We discuss issues which will create strong families who we believe create strong communities. We have current authors, exciting leaders, and cutting-edge resources and tools for you to use so that you can have the best family you can have. It's a brisk, beautiful autumn morning. I love this time of year, and I'd like to share with you some things that you can do with your family. One of the things that I do with my little girls is we make a big production out of redecorating our house. So we take down all of the summer wreaths from our doors and summer centerpieces that decorate my house. And we put out all of the beautiful pumpkins and gourds. And some of you may go to the local farm and get all of your gourds and your pumpkins and your corn stalks. And I do that a little bit, but I actually just use, you can go to stores now like AC Moore and Hobby Lobby and buy pumpkins that look really fabulous. They look real. And that's what I use. I put them right outside. And actually, I even got pumpkins this year that have a beautiful big, huge D on the front of them. But it's so much fun for me with my children to decorate the front of the house and making inviting with big orange bows and everything. And we, of course, do a lot of crafts with pumpkins and gourds and even paper plates. I always have paper plates in my house. They're cheap. I keep them in my craft closet. And then during the October and November months, we enjoy painting them or coloring them orange or cutting them out and making different shapes out of them. And then we hang them all over the place. And sometimes we'll even pop them in the mail to grandparents or cousins and aunts and uncles. Something else that I enjoy doing with my girls in the month of October is we love finding these awesome corn mazes. If you haven't been to a corn maze, you really need to go to one. They have a great one right here at Cherry Crest Farm, and it's really fun. I usually take my children's friends, and the one that we do usually takes about an hour. It can even take 2 hours to go through. It's really a whole entire Saturday that we will spend at one of these farms, and they always have lots of autumnal treats. They might have the hot apple cider. They might have the roasted chestnuts. So again, just teaching our children about the different vegetables that are coming in and the different things that are happening during the month of October. Another thing that I love doing with the girls is, and this does not cost a lot of money, but just in all of the candy dishes, putting out all of those little pumpkins or candy corns, and we always have orange napkins with leaves on them. We do a lot of leaf projects, which again is really cheap and free. Go outside in your backyard. Have the children pick a whole bunch of leaves, bring them inside, go to Google, or if you have a leaf book, identify which leaves these are. And then your child can make a leaf journal for the month of October. And then if you really get fancy one day, if you have tracing paper or even just printer paper from your printer, you put the leaf underneath of that. And with your crayon, you just go over that with the children. And you have this print of a leaf. Perhaps it's a maple leaf, an oak leaf. And you can talk to the kids a little bit about deciduous trees versus evergreen trees. You know, the deciduous, they lose all of their leaves. And the evergreens will still stay throughout the year, providing beautiful color and privacy and a great smell as well. So again, just talking to your children about the seasons and bringing God into it and how he is in control of all of our seasons and how marvelous and imaginative he is, that he created leaves and trees that change their color. I know at our house, because the fall came in quickly, I think, though we've had some warmer days, our leaves have changed colors and really look absolutely beautiful. So we've been enjoying them for a couple of weeks, actually. So point the majesty and the miracle of the changing of the leaves in this new season. Share it with your children and do fun crafts with them and keep these things in the house for them. Another thing that we enjoy doing is cooking with a lot of pumpkin and a lot of squash, a lot of vegetables that we have during this season. I make pumpkin pancakes quite a lot with the children, and we also have pumpkin cappuccino around. And I think that all of these things that we do with our families are creating traditions and memories in their minds, so that when they go off to school, to college, or when they get married, they will probably do these same traditions with their family and really pass on a legacy. And also, I know for me, when I go back to my mom's house, she was always, you know, honoring each season with different foods and different decorations. You get the warm fuzzies and that great feeling like you're a little child again when you go home. So that's not going to be a long time away for me. My children are still little, but when they are in college, when they are married and they're bringing grandchildren back to my house, it's my prayer that they're just going to be so happy when they see, you know, that same pumpkin or that same pumpkin pillow that they saw every year for many, many years when they were living at home. So I'm going to give you a quick, easy recipe. This is my last piece for the autumn that you're all enjoying right now. But there's something called a spiced latte, a pumpkin spice latte that I make at home. And this costs only 40 cents for you to have a warm, frothy, mouth-watering, fabulous little vacation. You can be sitting right in your own kitchen, and for 40 cents, you can feel like, you know, you're at Starbucks. So what you're going to do, and it also makes the house smell really, really fabulous. It'll smell like a Yankee candle, but it's all natural. So this is what you're going to do for your pumpkin spice latte. You're going to get a saucepan, and you're going to simmer 2 cups of sugar and 2 cups of water. We all have that in our house. Then you're going to get 1/4 cup of pure pumpkin. Some of you can get pure pumpkin out of a pumpkin that you bought at the farmer's market. I cheat, and it still turns out fabulously well. You can just get the canned pumpkin, which is how I make everything in autumn. I get to the canned pumpkin, and it still tastes fabulous. So 1/4 cup of this pure pumpkin, and then 2 cinnamon sticks and 2 teaspoons of pumpkin pie spice, which you can buy anywhere. And then you're just going to put all of this in the saucepan. 2 cups of water, 2 cups of sugar, the 1/4 cup of pure pumpkin, 2 cinnamon sticks, and you're just going to whisk and simmer that for about 10 minutes, depending on if you have gas or electric. And then, if you want to, you can put, it's already fabulous, you can drink this. But then, if you wish, you can put a little bit of coffee in, if you wish, to make it even more decadent or more energetic. And a little bit of warm milk, or even some whipped cream. Listen, you can be as imaginative as your taste buds bring you down this awesome path of pumpkin spice latte worlds. But I just want you again to just start thinking about, make it interesting, make it fun. Bring in those smells into your home, those autumn smells, those autumn tastes. Visually, what are your children seeing? And this actually reminds me, this recipe that I just shared with you for the pumpkin spice latte, this deliciously warm and frothy drink, it reminds me that we do a lot with cinnamon spice sticks, too, in this during this month. That's a really easy project for your children in a craft. They smell so fabulous. They're such an interesting shape. And I do a lot with potpourri with the kids with these cinnamon sticks. And you can have your children put them in little, we have fabric pieces all the time that you can get at the thrift store. Go to any thrift store and go to their crafty section. All thrift stores have them, and just let your kids choose and pick out a ton of different fabrics that they like. And then we bring that home, and then my kids take classes about this time of year at Joann Fabrics. You can go there. They're very reasonably priced. Get their friends signed up as well. And they teach the kids how to make these little tiny pillow pockets or that you can shove things into to make, what are they called, potpourri pillows. And so it's quick. It's easy. They have these little girl sewing machines now that are really more easy for kids to manage and handle. And my girls all begin making a ton of these little spicy cinnamon stick potpourri pockets. And we put them all over the house, so the house smells really yummy. And we also start making gifts for Christmas. So the kids will start making these little potpourri crafts, these little pillow pockets for their mum-mums and pop-pops and their cousins and their aunts and uncles. And that's something that we have to start thinking about, too, in this month of October, because Christmas is really just right around the corner. So some of these crafts that you're choosing to do, you know, save them, hold them, make extra ones for Christmas. So enjoy your October. Definitely hit a pumpkin farm or an orchard. I believe that you can even still pick some apples at some of our orchards. I never miss doing that with my kids. And just create great memories for your children or your grandchildren. Or if you don't have kids, you can be still creating great memories for the children who are in your life. Make the time to do that. Make the time to have memories with them. And you know what? We can even address clothes. I pull out a lot of the pumpkin colored clothes. I pull out a lot of the oranges and the cranberry colors and a lot of the browns, our brown boots. You know, this is the time that you can pull all of your browns and your blacks. You know, the brown is the new black, so I'm hearing. And also, leopard print is really hot in October. Leopard pillows, leopard shirts, leopard shoes, leopard sweaters. Don't go overboard. Just choose one or two items to wear. But I know that my girls and I have a lot of fun with all of those autumnal prints. So again, hit a farm in Lancaster or one that's in your area. Bring the kids out. Make memories for them. Let's talk about Reformation Day. This is something that I spend some time with my children during the month of October, because it was actually October 31st, quite a few years ago, when, I don't have the exact date, 1517, I think, when Martin Luther wrote to an archbishop back in Germany protesting against the sale of indulgences in the Catholic Church. And it was during this time that he wrote his 95 thesis, and it was actually October 31st, 1517, that he was bold and courageous, because remember, he was a priest, he was a follower of the Catholic Church, he loved their teachings, but he was reading the Bible, and he discovered that nowhere in the Bible did it talk about indulgences. So he wanted to bring Reformation to the Catholic Church. And this is when, in Wittenberg, Germany, he nailed his 95 thesis to the door of that little tiny church. And that bold statement and movement, confronting the church during that time, in his scholarly way, he was objecting to the current church practices back in 1517. And he just wanted them to delve in the way that he did, the way that he started reading the Bible. And you know, he had questions like, why does the Pope, whose wealth today is greater than the wealth of the richest basilica, you know, of St. Peter, why do we still have poor people? Why aren't we giving them money? That's a really great question that he brought up in his 95 thesis. He also insisted that since forgiveness was God's alone to grant, God's alone, that's what the Bible teaches us, those who claimed that indulgences absolved buyers from all punishments and granted them salvation were in error. Christians, he said, must not slacken in following Christ on account of such false assurances. So we actually have a movie that's very well done on Martin Luther's life. And this is a man that was doing things to try and relate to Jesus Christ or try to be looked upon as better. And he wanted to be accepted by Christ, you know. Remember, there were people that were climbing up the church steps and they were bleeding and they were hurting themselves because they wanted to be accepted by Jesus Christ and they did not understand that there's no need. You have been accepted by Jesus Christ. Thankfully, he did it all on the cross 2,000 years ago. We just need to have a relationship with him. We do not need to hurt ourselves physically to show Christ how much we love him. And then I have this adorable book. It's a children's book. You can Google it, but it's about Martin Luther. It's really sweet. It has fabulous illustrations. And again, that's something that I read to my girls in the month of October. And I'm just so thankful to him for bringing about the Reformation. And you know what? We just recently had a missionary who went over to the Philippines, and I have Corinne in the studio with me, actually, and she may know about this as well, but we had a missionary that came back from the Philippines, and they actually still have people over there who are doing things like beating themselves on their back, and their backs are just bleeding and just stripped because they feel like that's going to get them into heaven. And so, you know, Martin Luther was fighting against this back in the 15th century and trying to bring true freedom to Christians. And it's still happening right even here. Crazy. People are still, I know, it's wild. So during this month of October, read a book to your kids about the Reformation and about Reformation Day, October 31st, and enjoy remembering that.
And what year was that, Carla? How many years ago?
October 31st, 1517. Okay. So what was that, like 600 years ago? Am I doing my math
almost,
right?
Almost 500 years ago. In 3 years, it'll be 500 years ago.
Right. So, and remember, he was hated for that. He actually ended up going into exile. So this was really a huge thing. He really was being bold and walking on the narrow path, like many of us are today. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he is one of the great saints that went before us. So crack that open and give your children a little bit of Christian history. This is Carla Dedessi here at Your Family Matters, WFYL, working for your liberty, where we believe that strong families make a strong nation. Please stream in or listen every Friday from 8 until 9. Today we have Ricardo Ferreira in the studio with us. He's a junior partner and a financial professional at McNamara Financial Group, and insurance and financial services, right, located in Doylestown. I'm thrilled to have you here in the office with us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Can you share a little bit about how you got into this professional world of finance?
Well, I always had an interest in, you know, helping people, being kind of like a mediator, you know, trying to help people out and being a middleman and trying to connect one dot to the other. I started my career after I got out of the military in project management, so I was able to, you know, do some of that. But I always felt that there was a lot missing from that. It was very political when it came to, you know, townships and permits and things. And then in 2007, you know, the circumstances kind of got the best of us. I got laid off, my wife got laid off, and I was looking around for a different career path, and this is kind of where I ended up, was in this industry, yeah.
Wonderful. And through that time, when you were laid off and your wife was laid off, did you have to take anything from the government, or was your family able to rally around you and support you and get you through that rough time?
No, it was all family. You know, thankfully, I didn't have to ask for anything from the government. It was all family. We are blessed to have a huge family that just, you know, when times of need, we all kind of gather around each other and help each other out.
And I know also personally that during those times, you really did cut back a lot with things and make hard choices that all of us need to do when we are going through financial difficulties.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We had to cut down on everything. I mean, we got rid of anything that wasn't a necessity. We had a dog at a time that we had to give to my in-laws, my wife's parents. They graciously accepted them and mm-hmm. kept them. And we had to, I mean, we just had to make all the hard choices to be able to just keep going and mm-hmm. trying to proceed ahead.
Mm-hmm. And I just think that your story is so inspiring that in 6 years or whatever the time lapse was, but that working really hard, both you and your wife, you were able to come out on top, actually. I know that you were able to move out of the city and move into the suburbs. And I just, it's really the American dream.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we really didn't do it ourselves. It was because of our family that we were able to be where we are today. My parents helped out a lot. My in-laws, my wife's parents helped out a lot. You know, when we were struggling, we were either eating, you know, at their house or mm-hmm. my parents' house or, you know, anybody that basically would take us.
Mm-hmm.
But it was because of them that we were able to really get back on our feet and you know, move, I guess, up. Mm-hmm. I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it took a lot of hard work on our part. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we have two kids and my wife works full time and she mm-hmm. does the best that she can trying to keep the house together and everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the kind of business that I'm in, we have extremely long hours and, you know, nights and weekends sometimes if need be. So it does take a lot of hard work. I mean, but that's anything that is worthwhile is mm-hmm. going to take, you know, okay. hard work.
Mm-hmm. So prayers and perseverance. All right, let's get right down to business for all the families who are listening. We have a lot of questions for you today. First question. How do you advise families to save for college and or private schooling? How do we go about doing this, Ricardo?
There's several ways that you can save for college and school. You know, some examples are just a regular account that you have earmarked, whether it be an investment account or, you know, account at the bank or something like that. They have earmarked for your child's education. That would probably be the most straightforward and simplest way to do it. You know, a couple of drawbacks to that are, you know, if it's an investment account, some tax, you pay taxes and dividends on everything as it comes in, and it's taxed at parents' rate. But that's probably the most straightforward way to do it. You also have programs called a UTMA account that you can open up. There's a Pennsylvania UTMA. And the thing about that type of account is that it's good tax-wise because it's taxed at the child's rate, not at mm-hmm. the parent's rate. Obviously, children that they don't work, their rates are very low. The drawback to that account that I see is that the parents lose control of that account once the child reaches the age of majority. So if for some reason parent doesn't think the child's mature enough to handle that kind of money at the time or something like that, you lose total control. So I like the account for the tax reasons, but I don't like the account because you do lose, you know, some control over that. My favorite way to do it is a 529 program. And the 529 program, they're sponsored by most states in the country. And, it, you know, what happens is you can put money away towards college. It's tax deferred. And when you take the money out for qualified education expenses, it's tax free as well. The positive side is if for some reason your child decides not to go to college or there's money left over, you can always change the beneficiary on that account to another child. So that's, you know, that's definitely a big plus. And if there is money left over after all that, you can take the money back out and the money's still yours. You know, there's some penalties in there that you have to be careful of, but it's not a big deal.
So I'm hearing you say that you have more control over that 529 program.
Absolutely.
Okay, which I think would be a huge positive.
And there's a lot of different ones to choose from. Like I said, it's most states have their own. Pennsylvania has one. Most states have their own sponsored. They're sponsored by different companies, mutual fund companies. So, you know, you can search for the best one for you. And there's also some tax advantages as far as state tax that you would have to talk to your accountant about to see if you qualify for them. But there's definitely bigger advantages with the 529, I believe, than most of the other programs.
How do we teach our children good financial principles and to save wisely? How do we model that for them? Do you have any ideas for us?
The most important way for me, I believe, is to lead by example. We can't expect our children to have good principles in anything if they're seeing, you know, contradictory actions from us. So that's really the biggest thing, I think. If your children see that you're spending your money wisely and, you know, you're saving wisely, then they'll grow up with that, you know, that in mind as well. I also like the idea of giving an allowance to our children for completing certain tasks, certain chores around the house. It teaches them that you have to work for the money, that it's not just handed to you, you don't have a money tree in the backyard that you shake off. So I like that idea as well. Once they actually receive the money that you give them, it's also good, you know, for you to actually take the trip to the bank and have them put the money in the bank and, you know, show them that, you know, this is the place where we save our money, where, you know, we're going to earn some interest. And I remember growing up when, you know, my dad would take me to the bank and I would see the statements come in every month and see the interest grow. It would get me excited because I'm thinking, wow, that's more money than I had last month.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that kind of thing is, you know, very important to them. And another good thing is to not, how do I put this? To have them buy certain things on their own. So, you know, if they're in some kind of, you know, soccer or football or something like that and they need a piece of new equipment, maybe have them buy it out of their own pocket, so whatever they need, or at least part of it. So they understand that the money that we have, it's not just for the fun stuff. It's you know, we need to spend that money on the things that we need first, and then we save for the other stuff that we want to spend, mm-hmm. you know, later on. That's for the, you know, the quote-unquote fun stuff. So I like those ideas. I think are probably some of the best ones that I've, you know, and that's stuff that I've heard from, you know, clients of mine, stuff that's worked for them, and it's also, you know, things that we try to practice ourselves with our own kids.
You know, I remember when I was in high school, we had a project that we had to follow a stock. It could have been a penny stock or anything, and my dad taught me how to do that in conjunction with the class, and my dad went a step further and gave me a little bit amount of money that I could actually deposit in there.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, was I so excited to open up that newspaper every day and find that little stock and see if it was going up or down. But it really was a very applicable way to teach a child, you know, the worth of that money and what really happens in the positives and minuses, because I think that this can be really confusing for adults, let alone for children. And I also think that it's interesting that you talked a little bit about needs versus wants.
Oh, absolutely.
And modeling to our children what needs are, because I think sometimes I'll be shopping with a girlfriend and she'll be looking at a purse and she'll say, I really need that. Well, that's really more of a want.
Absolutely.
So again, just modeling for our kids the differences between needs and wants.
Yeah, I describe a need as roof over your head, clothes on your back, and the food in your fridge. That's about it. Outside of that, most of the stuff is all, you know, wants.
A luxury.
Car, right.
Luxury.
Yeah, so it's important for them to know the difference between what is a need and what is a want. Because you can't. That is, there are some areas where it's gray, even when it comes down to buying a vehicle. You know, do I need to buy, you know, the most expensive vehicle that I can afford? No, I can scale back a little bit and maybe save some of that money for something else later out down the road.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's always prudent to live below one's means versus at them, or definitely it's more prudent than living above one's means.
Yeah. And another important thing as well is, you know, not even while the children are younger, but as they get older, you know, especially when a lot of kids go to college for the first time. I remember when I went to college, they had these credit card offers all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not ready for that responsibility, mm-hmm. that can really put you in a hole right away. I mean, never mind the student loans that everybody's, you know, leaving college with, but all of a sudden it's so easy to get this credit card, you're approved right away. It's very important to teach them credit and that money's not really yours. You know, when you every time that you borrow money from that credit card, you owe somebody that money back. Mm-hmm. You have to pay them back, and they're charging you a massive interest most of the time. Mm-hmm. So that is another thing that, that we have to teach them.
I agree with you. My personal perspective on credit cards is that they're really just for convenience. And, you know, I'll just share with you that my husband and I pay off our credit cards every month. We don't want to pay a penny of interest. That's my money. It's not the credit card company's money. And I know that some people are not able to do that. But really, I think that that's a great way to live, that the credit card is really for convenience. And you don't want to get stuck in that trap where you're paying these exorbitant interest fees. A lot of people ask me, do families need insurance? Like, if I just get married, why do I need insurance? I don't have children. What would be your response to that?
I would say that absolutely insurance is really the foundation of any good financial strategy. You know, there's a lot of important types of insurance that one needs to get, especially if you're married. Probably the most important one, I believe, is life insurance. It provides a benefit that will, you know, if your insured passes away, that it'll pay a benefit to the survivors, to the beneficiaries. I can't tell you how many times I've heard stories of, you know, families, you know, their husband or wife passing away early, and then, you know, and people are gracious enough to do beef and beers and things like that to try and raise money for the family. If a person has adequate life insurance, those things are no longer a necessity. Mm-hmm. It's just more of a camaraderie type of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I can give you an example of a person that, you know, that went, you know, basically their whole lives without a lot of life insurance. And they had, you know, a lot of small children, you know, kids in private school. And, you know, we finally convinced him to raise his life insurance, and he got a very good rate. And then a year and a half later, he passed away from cancer.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, four kids, you know, they had a small business that they dealt with, but the wife wasn't really involved in the business, so she didn't really know, you know, how to run that business. But if he hadn't bought that extra insurance, I don't know how that family would have survived.
Right.
So it's very, very important, and it's not, you know, people think, you know, especially when you're younger and you get married, you're in your 20s, early 30s, you still think you're indestructible, and it's not just not the case. You know, obviously I see it a lot more than most people, but, you know, all it takes is just maybe 5 minutes to think, you know, about what's happened to other people in the past, especially, you know, with cancer and maybe car accidents mm-hmm. or something like that. Anything can happen. And if the breadwinner in that family is no longer able to, is not around anymore, it passed away, what's that mean for the rest of your family? You know, would you have to think to yourself, what would I want to have happen to my family if I was no longer here to be able to provide for them?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably, you know, one of the most important types of insurance that you could have.
Mm-hmm. Are there other types of insurance, like health insurance? Or
absolutely. Health insurance, you know, most people, you know a little bit about health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
It can be very confusing, you know, to everybody knows that, especially open enrollment and stuff like that. And you hear about a lot of stuff about Obamacare and everything. It's a very confusing subject. And if you want to talk to someone about health insurance, you really need to make sure that person you're talking to knows, we know what they're talking about, is doing this as their function. But it obviously, it just helps you pay your medical bills. If you need to go to the hospital, a doctor or something like that, that's also a very important type of insurance to have.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that that's actually a necessity, for yourself, because all it takes is one broken arm mm-hmm. and to have to pay that hospital bill, and that could put you in a bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
Disability insurance, you know, provides a benefit if you're disabled and you can't work. Not to be confused with workman's comp. A lot of people think, well, I have workman's comp, I don't need disability insurance. Disability insurance is outside of workman's comp. Workman's comp is something that you have at work, right? If you get injured on the job, you know, workman's comp will pay for you to get, you know, to provide a salary for you, basically. Disability insurance is outside of work. So you're out, you know, cleaning your gutters, you fall off your ladder, you break a leg, you can't work, that kind of thing.
Okay.
You actually have more of a chance of you know, going into some kind of disability type of situation than you do of actually passing away. So, you know, and it can be detrimental if you can't work for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks. Mm-hmm. What does that do, you know, to your cash flow for your house?
Mm-hmm.
Now, hopefully, you have an emergency fund set up for yourself. And I always recommend having at least 3 to 6 months, depending on the type of work that you do, saved up, so that if there is, you know, something like that, you know, you can buy a disability policy mm-hmm. that has a longer waiting period that, you know, you may not have to spend so much money on.
Mm-hmm. That's wise.
And then there's also long-term care insurance. This not so much for the younger people, but for, you know, families in their 50s or and above. It's also a very important policy. And this is more, this isn't so much to protect yourself per se, like the other insurances are. This is mostly to protect your family and your family's inheritance. So if you go into some kind of long-term care situation, whether it be at a nursing home or staying at home, you know, having home care, you want to make sure that you're, that A, you're not spending all of your assets trying to keep up with the care, or having your family spend their assets trying to keep up with their, with your care. But you also don't want to be a burden on your family and have to worry about your son or daughter coming over and helping you bathe. And a lot of people have different opinions about this, but I think if you actually stop for a second and you think about it, myself, I wouldn't want my daughter to have to come over and, you know, sorry for the crudeness, but have to wipe my butt. You know, it's just not something that I want my kids to have to do for me. I never wanted to have them be that in that situation and look at me in that way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, long-term care policy will kind of take care of all that. So mm-hmm. it's like I said, it doesn't so much protect yourself. I think it's more protecting your assets and your family from having to deplete, you know, their mm-hmm. inheritance and, mm-hmm. and being a burden on them, basically.
And I think also, like, when I am a grandparent, I'm probably my – I have three little girls. They're going to be taking care of their children. I don't want to have to take away time from them taking care of my grandchildren to take care of me every day.
Yeah, and that's a big problem nowadays is actually there's, like, a three-generational type of thing going on because now the parents are taking care of the grandparents and taking care of the kids at the same time, and it's a ton of stress on the family, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm.
So that's really an excellent option. Let's talk about when we buy a home. Should we have insurance when we purchase a home?
Yeah, absolutely. You want to have, you know, you buy a home, you want to buy a homeowner's policy, and that's going to protect your house, you know, in case there's a fire or something like that. You know, the one thing to understand about homeowner's insurance is that, you know, when they qualify your house and they give the value for the house, it's not a retail value for the house. So I can tell you one thing. When I was living in Northeast Philly at the time, my house was probably worth somewhere around $150,000 or something like that, but the house was insured for over $250,000 because that's how much it costs to replace the house in case of a fire burning it down or something like that. So you want to make sure that that's correct, that replacement value, it's what it's called. You want to make sure that that's correct because if it's not correct, the insurance company may cut your benefit if you ever need to use it.
And just in my ignorance, when we have homeowners insurance, do they also cover all the furniture that was lost?
And cover the furniture, okay. Cover, you know, your garage.
Window treatments, window whatever's treatments. Inside
yeah,
of the
exactly.
house. Okay,
exactly.
Very good
and the other
know.
Thing, if you have like a pipe that bursts, mm-hmm. they won't pay for the replacing of the pipe, but they'll pay for the damage that the pipe caused. So that's the other thing to
that's
remember.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting, but good to know. Should we be paying our mortgage once or twice a month? Is there a benefit to paying it more or less?
So it's been proven that if you make a biweekly payment on your mortgage, the mortgage will be paid off sooner. So this is different from a bi-monthly payment because in a bi-monthly payment, you only make payments twice a month. So in a biweekly mortgage, you make payment every 2 weeks. So you're actually making two extra payments over the course of the year. So, and that's going to substantially reduce the amount of years on your mortgage. So as an example, on a $300,000 mortgage at 5% interest rate over 30 years, it would save you 4 years and 9 months on your length of time and about $23,000 in interest.
Wow.
So it's very important not to think I'm just going to pay this twice a month. It's every 2 weeks.
Okay.
So, and that's what actually...
Just a little bit more than twice a month.
Right, just a little
bit.
Yeah, because you have some months that might have 5 weeks mm-hmm. in it or something like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that really shaves off... almost 5 years.
Right.
And almost $25,000, which is a lot of money. I mean, that's 1 year at a private college
mm-hmm.
today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It could be a car that you know that your family needs or anything
else. And someone
else.
Would just call you to change that existing? Is that something?
Most mortgage companies nowadays have an option for a biweekly payment. So you just call your mortgage company and say, hey, listen, I'm going to start paying this. Or you can just send them a check every 2 weeks, too.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's just easy enough and just, you know, write your account number down.
Okay. Okay. How do we as families build retirement savings? Is that something that I should put off until I'm 50 years old? Is this something that I should start doing, you know, when I get my first job at 18?
You know, all too often I see families not really starting to save for their retirement until they're in their 50s. And that's kind of a shame because, there's a lot of things that can happen between your 50s and your 60s when you go to retire. And, you know, a lot of they try and save everything that they can to get their kids through college, but I feel like really it should be, you know, if you're going to list in priority, it should be emergency fund first, retirement second, college third, because you can borrow for your kids' college, you can't borrow for your retirement. So that to me is extremely important. I think that you should start saving for retirement as soon as you start working. Contribute to the 401k if you have one at work. Maybe even to an IRA, your own personal retirement account, if one isn't offered at work, or even both. Yeah. But I don't think most people realize how much they need for retirement. Most studies suggest that you should have 8 times your annual pay saved up for retirement by the time you reach age 67. So if you are making $100,000 a year, that's $800,000 that you should have saved up when you retire. That's a massive number. Mm-hmm. So, and it can be daunting if you are now 50 years old and you've put your kids through college and you see that you only have $200,000 saved up. Like, well, how am I going to make up the difference? So, and you don't want to be in that kind of a situation where, you know, where all of a sudden you're trying to catch up, and then if there's an economic downturn, you can get laid off. I've seen plenty of people get laid off when they're 52, 53 years old. And it takes them a long time to find another job,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they may not be as set up as some of these younger mm-hmm. kids coming out through college as far as education-wise, and it takes them a lot longer to get a job, where they may have to settle for a lower-paying job just so they can continue working.
Mm-hmm.
So I really do believe that as soon as you start working, you need to start putting away and having a plan together to be able to save for retirement. And then once you do that, you're going to be used to that. It's going to be just part of your budget.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just really like paying a cell phone bill. So
you're not even going to miss it, really.
You're not going to miss it. So when, you know, as you get raises and you're better in your career and things like that, you can start putting more money away, and you'll have the money that you need to, you know, to help buy a new car or to save for college or something like that. Obviously, you know, that's what we're here to do, is we're here to help people, you know, plan for the retirement and things like that. So it can be a very daunting task, and a lot of people don't even want to look at it because they feel overwhelmed by it, and they don't even know where to start. You know, how much money do I need? They have no idea as to what to expect when they do retire, especially if you are in your 40s or 50s. Your mind's not really there yet. You're not thinking, okay, what am I going to do when I'm 67? Everything changes in five years. You know, if you look back 5 years ago, you probably think differently than you do today. You probably act differently than you do today. You're in different circumstances. So think about it. If you're, you know, 50 years old, you're thinking 17 years out. So it's there's a lot there. That's what we're here to help, you know, people.
And this
do.
Is where you can help us. You can
Absolutely.
Guide us. You can show us exactly where our money will be 20 years from now.
Absolutely. And not that we're going to be telling you what to do with your money, but we can give you ideas as to experiences that we've had with other clients that have retired already, and, you know, what they've done, and actually maybe, you know, provide you with some ideas as to how much money you think you're going to spend. Because that's really, when you get down to it, it's not how much money, you know, you make anymore. That's the big step that people have a hard time understanding, is when I retire, it's not, you know, I'm not getting a paycheck anymore. Like, that's done. You know, you get a little bit from Social Security, maybe a pension if you're lucky enough to have it, but it's how much am I going to spend? And that's really what drives, you know, the retirement plan, is how much you think you're going to spend. If you're going to spend $50,000 a year, you're going to have, you know, you need a lot less money than someone who's going to spend $100,000 a year and it's going on 3 or 4 different cruises every year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, every case is completely different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I hear you saying that, you know, we should begin saving for our family's college sooner than later, saving for retirement sooner than later. We should have insurance that protects us. Homeowners, when we get married, health, disability, long term. And I really like all of the principles that you gave to us for modeling wise saving and planning with children. So I just would like to say that Ricardo Ferreira offers investment advisory services as a representative of Prudential Financial Planning Services, a division of Pruco Securities, LLC, and securities products and services as a registered representative of Pruco. McNamara Financial Group, Insurance and Financial Services, is not affiliated with Pruco.
other products and services may be offered through a non-PRUCO entity. And how do we get in touch with you specifically today?
Well, we have phone number at the office, obviously. It's 215-348-3176. We have our good assistant that's there to answer the phone whenever anybody calls. You could also get in touch with us through our website. It's at www.mcnamarafinancialgroup.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, and McNamara Financial Group has a Facebook page as well, so you can look us up that way.
Are we able to get your newsletter?
Yes, absolutely.
So we could call that number, go to the website, and just get your newsletter, because I'm looking at your newsletter, and this offers a lot of great ideas and suggestions,
I
think.
Absolutely.
And this comes out every other month.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Sure thing.
This is Carla Dedesi with Your Family Matters on 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. Ricardo Ferreira, junior partner and financial professional at McNamara Financial Group, is licensed and authorized to sell insurance and securities in Pennsylvania. He is licensed to sell securities in New Jersey, Massachusetts, North Carolina, and Colorado.